around Australia, weekend property auctions have become almost a national pastime. Well, that's of course when we were not locked down, because people would go along and have a sticky beak. They wanted to get an idea of what the market was like. They wanted to fantasise about their dream home so they'd inspect homes open for inspection. They just went along to watch the street theatre unfolding before them. I guess it's a bit like watching buskers, isn't it? You see an auction being conducted, you just got to stop and gawk and have a look for a while. Of course, over the last year, we've had to learn to adapt, with many auctions now being conducted online. But auctions are still a particularly popular method of selling properties, especially when the market's strong. But for all the street theatre and entertainment value, auctions represent a lot of stress, a lot of tension for those involved. So today, and in the next episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, we're going to concentrate on how to win auctions in this two-part series. Now, even if you're not planning to buy a property at auction, or even in the near future, there's going to be a lot of information in the chat I'm going to have with my son, Bryce Yardney, that will be valuable for you, because we're going to get inside the mind of a very successful investor, but also a very successful and busy buyer's agent who's bought hundreds and hundreds of properties at auction for our clients at Metropole and also at private sale. So welcome to today's show.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialise in helping you grow, protect and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
In our current hot property markets, more and more properties are being put to auction. And for every auction winner, there's usually three or four losers. So let's talk about some top tips on winning real estate bidding wars. And my chat today is with Bryce Yardney, who probably has bought more properties, and relatively expensive ones at that, at auction, than anyone I know. Now, Bryce happens to be my son and the National Director of Metropole Projects. Hi, Bryce.
Hi.
Now, we're going to discuss tactics to give you a chance to be the winning bidder at auction. But let's be blunt. Sometimes it's the person with the deepest pockets who wins, and tactics don't always work. 7 out of 10 auctions, I guess, end up selling to the people with the deepest pockets. But for the other third, I think a winning mix, a combination of style, guile, and savvy, that can actually help you win an auction, Bryce.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not always the one with the deepest pockets that will win. And sometimes you should just walk away if the other bidders pay too much. And I've walked away from a whole lot more properties without buying it than I have from ones that I've actually been successful and bought for clients. And that's one of my jobs, is to protect our clients from paying too much and knowing when to walk away.
That's a good point, because auctions do bring out emotion and, at the moment, FOMO. So let's work through how to win at auction, starting from before the auction, right through to auction, and then afterwards. So let's start with what you should do pre-auction. And let's assume you've done all the preliminaries, you've got your finance in place, you know which ownership structure you're going to use, you've made the investment decisions, you've got a strategic property plan, or if it's your home, you understand the haves, the have-nots, what you must have, you make those lists and chosen your suburbs. What do you do then, Bryce?
First thing to do is attend as many auctions as it takes for you to feel comfortable with the street theatre, the emotions, how it all works, understand the different ways that people react, the way that they bid, the tricks that they use, the tricks that the auctioneers will use as well, and the way that they behave, certain mannerisms, the way that they speak, and just feel really comfortable with it before you're going there. And because it's going to be a big emotional day for you, and you don't need any added emotion of anything new and surprising. You want to be comfortable going in.
Look, I think that's a good point. But don't only go to auctions, go and see, if you know a particular property you want to bid on, what you need to do is see the auctioneer who's going to bid at your auction in action. Now, interestingly, I just recently went to Brisbane, as you know, for looking for a property for ourselves and bid at auction. And I didn't know the auctioneer, but he had an auction 2 hours earlier. I saw his mannerisms. I saw his style. I saw how he worked, and it gave me ammunition to work ahead. But at the moment, a big argument people are talking about is underquoting. How much emphasis do you put on the range that agents tell you the property is going to go for?
Very little, very little. You've always got to do your own due diligence when it comes to price, because there's going to be a massive difference, not just between agencies, but the way different agents will price it as well. Some are just habitual underquoters. Some will quote it fairly and not want to get caught out. So always, always just do your own homework. Don't pay too much attention to it. And you don't want to be rattled on the auction day either by seeing that this property is going to go well above the advertised quoted price, when that price was never realistic and it was never going to end up there in the first place.
Sure. Well, there used to be an old auction saying that quoted low, see it go, quoted high, see it die. They want to get as many people to the auction as possible. Now, I'm not saying agents underquote. In today's very hot markets, I think agents and vendors are surprised. I know we're surprised by some of the prices that are achieved.
And it's very easy to do it legally, because all they have to do is find comparable properties within the last 3 months. And we know how much prices have changed within the last 3 months. So very, very easy to do.
Well, so what you've got to do is determine the value of your property. If you're a home buyer, you'd look at it differently to an investor. As a home buyer, you've actually got to come up with, is this where you want to spend the rest of your life? How happy would it make you? Would your heart sing every time you go home there? And you're prepared to pay a little bit more to do that. And I think you should end up with three figures prior to an auction price. The property value that you think the property is worth, looking at comparables, the price you'd like to get it at, which is lower. And in today's market, that's really unlikely to happen. And the stretched price, the price you're prepared to go to buy at an auction. So we go to an auction knowing what we think we should be paying for a property based on our client's needs, whether it's a development site and works on feasibilities, whether it's an investment based on what their strategy is. But the owner goes to the auction with what's called a reserve price. Everyone wants to know what his reserve price is. Does it actually matter?
Not really. Often the auctioneer has no idea until the day of the auction what the reserve is going to be. And then during the campaign, the vendor can change their mind based on market feedback. During the auction, they can change the reserve. And even when it passes in at the end, they can change the reserve.
So while it's nice to know, it shouldn't actually determine what you're prepared to pay. It's really what the figures that you do that's more important, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And in these kind of hot markets, very rarely, when clearance rates are 80%+, very rarely is the reserve your competition. It's the other people out there. Very rarely the reserve. Very rarely the auctioneer. It's the bidders.
Sure. So while it'd be nice to know, and it's worth asking, don't pay too much attention to what the agent says. But there are other due diligence things you should do before the auction price.
Yeah, I would always have, I've reviewed hundreds of thousands of contracts maybe in my time, but I'll always have it double checked by a solicitor. They look at it in a different way. They will understand things you don't, and always get a building and pest inspection done, because it's buyer beware and you don't want to have any regrets later because you didn't do your due diligence up front. So just get it done.
So at an auction, it's an unconditional sale. You can't afterwards say, can I have it subject to building and pest inspection, or can I have it subject to finance? So I think it's really important to understand the contract terms, but you're allowed to ask for changes in those terms before the auction price.
Yeah, so you can ask for changes. In a hotter market, it's going to be more difficult, because if they've got five or six other bidders and you're asking for some unrealistic terms, like instead of a 60-day settlement, you want a 180-day settlement, there's a good chance that they might just say no. But at the same time, they don't want to lose a bidder. You might be the highest bidder. You might be the one that ends up buying the property. So they don't want to lose you. And often they if they can accommodate what you're asking for, they will.
I think one of the interesting things to ask is, how do you pay the deposit? Mm. Different agents do it differently. And very few millennials have a checkbook. I know you don't.
No, I've never had a checkbook in my life. And it is changing. I think COVID helped us move to technology and electronic payment a whole lot sooner than otherwise would have. A lot of agents are starting to accept that as payment at auctions now, but always ask, because not all will. Some still want old school checks. definitely make sure you're on top of that beforehand, because you don't want to be stuck there without a check. I've seen people have to run to the bank and get $1,000 cash to put down just so they've got something to put down on auction day.
Interesting. Now, in the pre-auction due diligence, you will speak with the agent and there will be questions that you're going to ask the agent. And it's interesting to know some of these things, but it shouldn't make the final decision for you whether you buy that property or not. And there's a number of things that the selling agent knows that you don't know. And somebody who's buying every now and then, once every 7 or 8 years, the agent's really not going to tell you these things. But I know you, Bryce, as a buyer's agent who are basically on the speed dial of a lot of selling agents, you're going to be able to ask some of these questions and find out the answers. So what sort of things do you think the agent's got the upper hand on?
I think information like the real reason that the vendor's selling, the reserve price, or at least what the owner wants to get out of it, because sometimes they're not the same thing. How many other buyers are really interested, and possibly the range that they're likely to pay. Sometimes people will give that information away, sometimes they won't.
Well, often they've actually bid at another auction 2 weekends beforehand if it's in the same area, and so the agent knows where they're at, doesn't he?
Exactly, and it might have been at their auction. They might have missed out on two of their own ones. They know exactly where they're going to stop. So sometimes that information can be helpful. Or one of the more important things could be, why shouldn't you buy the property? You know, they probably know it a whole lot better than you. Maybe they know some good reasons why you should stick clear and move on to the next one.
That's why you've got to do your due diligence or have somebody on your side that can do it. Now, interestingly, despite the hot market at the moment, a large number of properties are being sold before auction. I know you and I looked into this a while ago when our research department did some homework and saw a significant number, sometimes up to a third of properties, and this has nothing to do with COVID and lockdown, were being purchased before auction. Despite a time when vendors should be more confident they could sell at auction. So why do you think anyone would even bother selling before auction?
Yeah, I was amazed by those numbers. I couldn't believe how many were being sold before auction. But there's a lot of reasons. It could just be something as simple as a nervous vendor, particularly older people who don't like the stress and emotion of the auction and just want to get it over and done with, but they don't really want something off market. They understand that advertising it and getting it out there will get them a better price. Then there's just, you know, sensitive sellers, because selling can be very stressful, especially if you're going through something else emotional. It could be a reason for selling, like a death, divorce, illness. It's important to remember that you're not taking advantage of these people. You're taking advantage of the situation, and you'll be helping them by getting them the sale, by relieving some of their stress and helping them to move on.
Any other reasons people would sell before auction, Bryce?
Yeah, I think there's two kinds of people that would be time sensitive. Could be you've already bought a property, which means that you need to sell this one and have it settle at the same time or just before they're settling their house that they've just bought. Or it could be the other way and they haven't found something yet and they want a bit of time. So you can come up with some creative solutions. I did a deal not too long ago where we had a 12-month settlement, but at any point during that 12 months, they can give us 60 days notice of settlement. So they've got up to a year to go and find a house. If they find something sooner, fantastic. They can settle earlier. And they love those settlement conditions. I think we got a pretty good price because of them.
Well, that works for our clients who are going to do a development on that site and gives them time. And the market's gone up since they bought that before they've settled. They're winning, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess there's also times when there's not as much interest in the property. We're not seeing that much that people will just, hey, there's only one bidder, I better accept them before the auction. And sometimes agents are in a bit of a hurry to sell a property, often out of area agents. And I know you tend to take advantage of that.
Yeah, it's always nice when that happens. Or even just the really good agents right now, they're so busy. They might have twice as much work on them. They did three times as much work on as they did this time last year. And they can't handle it all. And they're more than happy to sell something before auction and give themselves a bit more time during the week and on Saturday as well. And I think the last one is, particularly if it's your home and you've just got to really, you really want it and you've just got a knockout offer and you just want to buy it and you're happy to spend another $20,000, $30,000, even if you're overpaying a little bit, you just want to buy it. That happens too.
It does. So you put a premium off on the table, a knockout bid, and sometimes it's just too hard for a vendor to refuse. Okay, so that's the what we do, how we think before an auction. Now it's auction day. What are your rules for auction days, Bryce?
Number one is always arrive early. You don't want to be stuck in traffic and panicking that you're going to get to the auction. That's the last stress you need on an already stressful day. Then once you're there, I like to survey the landscape, see who else is there. Do they look like serious bidders? You know, are they inspecting the contract? Are they saying the right thing? Or are they just tire kickers, neighbors, people are just there to have a look? Before the day, ideally, like to have a realistic and well thought out limit. Set it the day before when you've got a cool, calm head, not on the day of the auction when there's emotion and it's not the best time to make a logical decision. And you don't want to find yourself having money forced out of you by a clever auctioneer because you haven't set your limit beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I like to look, when I'm looking at other people as well, watch for their body language as they're preparing for the auction and also during the auction, because that can tell you a lot about who the real players are and who the pretenders are, who's nervous, aggressive, who's ready to go. But also remember that your competition isn't the auctioneer. It's the underbidder. So you have to make them believe that you have the deeper pockets. Your aim is to scare the other bidders for them not to go to their number three price where they're extending themselves and paying more than they originally wanted to. You want to scare them as much as you can at the start by making them think that you've got a much bigger budget than them and they're just wasting their time pushing up the prices so they're going to have to pay more for the next one.
So you want to give them the impression you've got lots of money, more money left, and that comes in the way you're bidding as well, and in your stance and where you stand in your body language, just like you're assessing their body language.
Yeah, I think the opening bid is the most important one because that's your chance to say to anyone that's come here for a bargain today, you're not getting a bargain. You start your opening bid at maybe the bottom, maybe the middle of the advertised price. Anyone that's there for a bargain is just going to, that'll be it. They'll be knocked out instantly and you can deal with the real competition and not everyone else.
Well, I know in our position as Australia's largest buyer's agent, we often do have an understanding of what the reserve is or what the vendor wants. And I know one of your tactics is to actually speak to the agent beforehand. So when everyone else is standing around nervous, you actually position yourself near the agent, you talk to them, and when you start with the opening bid, you actually call them by name and you say, Gary, I'm going to offer you, and I actually don't do auction bidding anymore, but I did, as you know, for Jared a couple of weeks ago. So I spoke to the agent and I said, I'm going to put the property on the market right now. I bid at the top of their range and I put it out in the full numbers. And interestingly, it was on the market straight away. And at the end of the auction, we were lucky enough to get it. The auctioneer said to me, you spoiled my fun. It stopped the momentum of the auction. There were four other bidders and they didn't have a chance to say anything. So you're right. The opening bid's really important.
Yeah. And I think it's a good point as well. Make it seem like you're the agent's best mate. You're not. You can't be best mates with all of them. There's a good chance you don't even know them very well at all. But you give that impression to other people. You've got an unfair advantage over them. You've got this great relationship with the auctioneer that they don't have.
Yeah, they wonder what's going on. That's right. But to be fair, the auctioneer is there to represent his vendor. So we're not saying the auctioneer is doing anything different. It's just we're standing up the front next to the auctioneer and they're wondering what this guy's doing standing up there rather than in the crowd. And we're bidding long and strong and actually saying the full numbers, not 1,000 or 2,000, but the full numbers and coming in straight away. I think procrastinating, I think agonizing over your next bid is a sign of weakness. So call out your offer in full, say $750,000, not $5,000. But Bryce, you know, there's some people who think, I'm not going to bid until the last moment or until there's one or two bids left when they hear the properties in the market. What do you think of that strategy?
I've never understood the logic in that strategy. I mean, sometimes it works because seven out of 10 times those people have the deepest pockets anyway and they're going to win no matter what. But they've given up their opportunity to show everyone they've got the deepest pockets, to scare and intimidate and knock other people out earlier. They're just waiting until the very end once everyone else is done and coming in. I don't see any advantage to it.
Now, I remember the block last year when there was that gentleman who won lots of properties and he had a weird strategy. He would actually mess up the sense of the auction, the tone of the auction, the pace of the auction, but by coming up with unusual figures, sometimes small, sometimes large increments, not round figures. I don't agree with that. I think you should be aggressive as you can. You want to knock out the competition.
Yeah, especially in this market. That might be a better tactic in some other markets, but when it's a hot market, you know you're competing against 3, 4, 5, 6 other bidders. Focus on them, for sure.
And starting with a low bid and then moving up, as you said, just encourages other people to bid. And sometimes you actually have to keep up the large increment rises. So, again, if somebody keeps coming in with a $500 or $1,000, keep going up in $2,000 bids. And I think it's important that if you think the property is going to pass in, and despite the current strong auction markets, 20% of properties don't sell at auction, you really want to put yourself in the position of being the highest bidder, because that allows you the first right to negotiate with the vendor. But Bryce, that's not easy to position yourself that way, is it?
No, not at all. But that's where you want to be, because you get to negotiate one-on-one with the vendor, and until that falls through, and then everyone else gets an opportunity. And hopefully it doesn't fall through.
Sure. So if the property does pass in at auction, in other words, it doesn't meet the seller, the vendor's expectation or the reserve, then what generally happens is, as you say, the highest bidder gets the first right to negotiate with the vendor. So as we say, be in that position. Now, what normally happens is, if it's an outdoor auction and not an in-rooms auction, the agent will invite you inside, bring you in on his turf. And while he's doing that, his colleagues are out there making sure that underbidders don't go home, just in case it doesn't go ahead. How do you handle the passed-in property situation?
I definitely prefer to stand outside on neutral turf, but also where you can see what's going on. You can see if the agents are talking to other people, which they shouldn't be yet. They should be negotiating one-on-one with you. That doesn't always happen. So I think that's an important one to keep an eye on. And just assess if there is really any real competition sticking around. Have they all gone home? Have they all given up? Is it just you now? Or are there two or three underbidders sticking around that could still come in and be competition?
Okay. So you wait outside. Now what?
The first question I ask is, what is the vendor's reserve price? And then once I hear that, no matter what the answer is, so what's the vendor's reserve price now that the property hasn't sold? What will they sell for?
That's a good question. That doesn't mean that they have to lower their reserve, but they're now going to have gone through all the emotion, just like you've gone through a level of emotion. And so they may be more acceptable of lowering their expectations.
And it's important to remember what we said before, that they can change that reserve after the auction. That's a negotiation tactic. The agents know that, and you have to know that as well.
Sure. Of course, just because the property has been passed in doesn't mean it's the market price. Now, it really depends upon what's going on, because if every other bidder, and there were lots, and they all informed stop bidding at the same price, then it could well be true. But let's be blunt, it's really just the opening bid for negotiations if you really want the property.
Yeah, absolutely. And if the reserve was $500,000 and it's passed in at $480,000, you know, most people think, oh, we'll meet in the middle at 490. But if they now change that reserve to 520, now we're meeting in the middle at $500,000, and there's another $10,000 out of your pocket because you didn't know that the reserve can change, and you met them in the middle of their new price that they just made up on the spot.
So let's circle right back to the beginning. Lots of properties are sold at auction. In Melbourne and Sydney in particular, in the other capital cities less. Most good properties are sold at auction. And if I was to sell a property, I would put it to auction because I genuinely believe it's the best way to get the best price. Similarly, as a purchaser, I have no issue buying at auction. Sure, we don't always get it, but I can see my competition. I can see who else is out there. Bryce, I don't like boardroom auctions. I don't like the game agents play where they say, I've got another bidder, and you don't really know if they have.
Exactly. There's no transparency. You have to take them at their word, and that's hard to do sometimes. So the people love auctions for the reason, simple reason, there's social proof. You can see who you're being against. You can see exactly what's happening. And it's completely transparent.
So if you've missed out at auction, or if you're too nervous to buy at auction yourself, don't do what some people do and say, I'm not going to go to an auction again. I'm only going to buy a private sale. I'm only going to try and buy off market. That doesn't give you access to all the properties on the market. Get somebody on your side to even the odds. And in fact, if you use the buyer's agents at Metropole, because they've got relationships with many of the good selling agents, because we bought so many properties, because many of them are ex-selling agents, we do more than even the odds. We give you an unfair advantage because we actually speak the language. I know when you speak to an agent, Bryce, they talk very differently to you than if they speak to somebody off the street.
Yeah, absolutely. We both have clients to represent, and we both have to do that to the best of our abilities at the end of the day, but we can at least have an open, honest conversation, which is sometimes invaluable.
Sure. And again, that's why I'm saying it actually gives you an unfair advantage. Buying a property is a whole lot of decisions that have got to be made before, during and after the auction, and it's too emotionally charged to do it on your own unless you're very experienced. Look, to be honest, Bryce, I still get butterflies. At least they're running into a little bit of formation. It's a bit of excitement. How do you feel when you bid at auction?
Yeah, I still get a little bit of butterflies these days, but I think that's good. It shows that you care. If it was just purely unemotional, then maybe that's time to switch off because you're not as passionate, you don't care as much anymore. So I hope I keep them for a long time.
I agree with that. So if you're interested in having Australia's leading buyer's agency on your side, go to metropole.com.au, find out about what we do, and we'd love to help you in your property journey. Thanks for your time, Bryce.
Thanks for having me.
In a moment, I'm going to share my mindset message with you. But before I do, I'd like to remind you that next podcast, I'm going to do a special section on the psychology that auctioneers and selling agents use at auction. And while it's specific about auctions, the information relates to the psychology of success and negotiation in all areas. And it comes from my top-selling book, Negotiate, Influence, Persuade, where you can actually learn about how to get the best deal every time, whether you're buying or selling. So you can go to negotiateinfluencepersuade.com.au and pick up your own copy of this top-selling book as well. But in the next podcast, I'm going to be chatting about the psychology of success, so watch out for that. Now, in a moment, I'm going to share my mindset message with you, but I've got a little bonus. Just my way of saying thank you for listening to this podcast. If you go to podcastbonus.com.au, I'd be happy to gift you a bundle of reports and ebooks. There'll be a link in the show notes for that as well, podcastbonus.com.au, where it's just another way of you getting a resource library to help you through these challenging times. Another way of helping you through these interesting times in the property cycle, because even though the market's rising, it's not doing as well as it did earlier in the year, and not all properties are going to increase in value. On the other hand, we are in a once-in-a-generation property boom. My question to you is, do you know how to take advantage of this stage of the property cycle? It's not too late to get into the market, and I believe the best is yet to come, but you've got to be careful. Property investment's a process, not just an event. You can't just buy any property and hope it's going to go up in value a lot. So I believe you need to formulate a property plan and then get the right advice. And that's where my team at Metropole can help you. Why not have a chat with the team? Just go to metropole.com.au. Remember, we've got no properties for sale. We help beginning investors as well as experienced investors. And it all starts with giving you specific strategic advice, and that'll give you direction, results, and certainty. Go to metropole.com.au, and I look forward to being part of your ongoing wealth creation journey.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
In today's mindset moment, I want to share with you the money habits that separate the rich from the poor. And in my studies, I found that most adults start with the same amount of money. They just have a different philosophy. Now, sure, some people inherit money, but most of today's millionaires are self-made. So, as I said, most of us start with the same amount of money. But here's the exciting thought. Why not work full-time in your job and part-time on your fortune? See, most people want to get involved in property investment and do it full-time. Doesn't work that way. Definitely not at the beginning. So I'm suggesting you work full-time on your job and have a part-time job working on building your wealth. And what a feeling you're going to have when you can honestly say, I'm working on becoming wealthy. I'm not just working to pay my bills. When you have a wealth plan, when you have a strategy to get to where you want to go, you're going to be so motivated, you're going to have a hard time going to bed at night because you're going to be so excited that you're working to build wealth for your long-term future, for your financial independence. So indulge me for a moment because I'd like to share with you a simple formula for creating wealth. Here's my thoughts on how the money that you earn should be allocated. And it's what I've learned from one of my mentors, Jim Rowan, who taught me the 70-30 rule, that after you pay your fair share of taxes, you've got to learn to live on 70% of your after-tax income. So they're the necessities in life that you've got to spend money on. But then it's really, really important to look at how you allocate that remaining 30%. And I'm going to propose you allocate it in the following way. I think 30% of the 30%, about 10% of your income, should go to charity. In my mind, charity is a way of giving back to the community and helping those who need assistance. I believe contributing about 10% of your after-tax income is a good amount to strive for. Now, I believe it's also something you've got to learn early because it's easy to do when the amounts are small. It's pretty easy to give $10 when you've got $100. It's considerably harder to give $100,000 when you earn $1 million. Oh, you're probably thinking, oh, if I had $1 million, I'd have no trouble giving away $100,000 to charity. I'm not so sure. $100,000 seems like a lot of money. But if you start early to develop the habit before the big money comes your way, you're very likely to continue it on later in life. That's one of the things wealthy people do that the average person doesn't see they do, and they think wealthy people are greedy and don't look after the community. Many of them do. Now, with the balance of that 30%, in other words, 20% of your income, I think you should be allocating it to savings and investing. It's one of the most exciting parts of your wealth plan because it's going to give you peace of mind knowing that you're preparing for the winters of your life. So that's one of the big differences between the rich and the poor. Poor people spend their money and save what's left, while rich people save their money and spend what's left. If you think about it, 20 years, and two people earn the same amount of money every month, and they've earned the same pay increases over the years. But if one of them had the philosophy of spending all the money and saving what's left, and the other had the philosophy of saving first and investing that money and spending what's left, imagine the difference between those two people today. Today, if you knew both of those, you'd call one poor and you'd call the other wealthy, wouldn't you? So remember, spend 70% of what you earn on your day-to-day living, what you keep after tax on your day-to-day living, 10% to charity, and the balance you save. And when you've got sufficient savings, then you start investing it in growth assets so that over time you're then going to use the magic of compounding and leverage and time. Day by day, week by week, the results are hardly noticeable. But in 5 years' time, the differences are going to be pronounced. At the end of 10 years, the difference is going to be dramatic. So, as I said, the rich and the poor all start with the same amount of money. They just have a different philosophy. We're coming to the end of this two-part series on how to successfully win properties at auction. In the next podcast, I'm going to talk about the psychology of auctioneers, selling agents, and how, unless you understand that, you can be shark bait. So watch out for the next podcast, wherever you listen to these podcasts. Now, if you got some benefit from it, and you know somebody else who'd get some benefit from it, why not tell them about the Michael Yardney podcast? Of course, we always love it when you leave a review on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to this podcast as well. But let others get the same benefit you are. Help me in my quest to make as many successful property investors as possible in Australia to help more Australians become financially fluent. Now, if you want to catch me in between these twice weekly podcasts, just look out for Michael Yardney on social media. I'm in most places. And of course, I'd love to share my daily thoughts with you in my private Facebook group. Every day I leave a little snippet to tip a charge. Go to Facebook and look for the Property Update private Facebook group, and I'd love to share my thoughts with you. I'll be back again real soon. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney Podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney Podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?